LB, who's that?
Like,
so like look for the highest one, like your
That's your soulmate.
Okay, what are these negatives?
All right, well, first of all, let me make a few announcements before we actually look at the data. Okay, most of you got your distributions to be on time. Some of you got them to me late. The distribution should get to me by 10 p.m. Wednesday evening, so that I have time to put them in an SPSS data file and analyze the data and then send it back to you. I'm also going to be emailing you the outputs in the future. I printed them out today, but in the future I'm going to email them to you. So if people could just put their email addresses on a piece of paper for me. So I have yours, Giacomo. And then I can put you all in my address book, and we'll be all set. Okay. Now, some of you send me email messages with questions during the week. That's great. I really applaud you for that. And we'll get to some of the questions today. Now, the output. Every week, I will make this output for you, provided you send me the distributions by 10 p.m. on Wednesday. And I'm going to put them in a correlation matrix like this. And basically, each variable consists of the initials of your name. P stands for practice. These are only practice sessions that we're looking at. And then 1 is our first practice. So for example, SLP1 is Sarah Laser Practice 1. Okay? So LB is Leah, SN is Shoshana, SF is Sylvia, GB is Giacomo, and LA is
Laura,
right. So, so that's what that is. Now, if you look at the columns, pick your name, your variable, and if you look down the column, you can see all the correlations with the other people in the group. So, for example, Sarah Laser Practice 1, you go down, she correlated 0.56 with Leia. I'll talk about the negatives in a minute. 0.54 with Sylvia, 0.58 with Giacomo, 0.6 with Laura. Okay? Now the negatives. Shoshana, what you did was exactly. So pretend the negative isn't there. It's a positive. So it's just that 1 is most uncharacteristic. 9 is most characteristic. But all you do is you change the value sign or the valence sign and you're fine. So just pretend there's no negative there. Okay, great. Hey, could you put your email address? Thanks. What I was saying is that everybody needs to get their distribution to me by Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. so I can put it in the output. So, what was I saying? So the valence, just it's a positive rather than minus. And as you can see, what usually happens, there it's on the screen too. What usually happens is that the people who tend to have the highest correlations are the ones who did the best job. That tends to be how it is. And not surprisingly, the people who've had experience doing this were the ones who did the best job, which was Giacomo, and Laura. I mean, it's not a big surprise, and Sylvia. So if you look down your list and the correlations tend to be pretty high, that tends to mean that you saw things pretty accurately. If your correlations tended to dip in, you know, below 0.5, it suggests that there's some gaps in your understanding of the instrument. But there were some really high correlations. I think there was one that was 0.69. And that was between Laura and Giacomo, not surprisingly, because these two have done it before. So ultimately, what we're looking for is for everybody to get 0.7 with everybody else. That would be the goal. All right. So, and then the second part of the printout, I list for everybody, it's called case summaries, everyone's distributions, all six distributions for all 100 items. And what you can do is you can take a particular item number, like item one, and go across and you see, let's take item one. Sarah put item one in pile two, Leah put it in pile three, Shoshana in pile eight. Now that's really pile two, because she reversed her distribution. That's pile two. Sylvia in pile four, Giacomo in pile three, and Laura in pile three. So really there's very little variation for item one. You all pretty much nailed that. And I'm going to assume that the consensus is king. So if consensus is king and there's really no variation between two and four among six people, you pretty much all saw the session the same way, that whatever item one is, I don't have the distribution in front of me, whatever item one is, you all thought that was pretty uncharacteristic of the session. All right? Let's look at one that has more variation. Let me look. So item 13, Sarah put in pile 9, Leah in pile 6, Shoshana in pile 6, Sylvia pile 8, Jacqueline in pile 7, Laura in pile 8. Again, not all that much variation, but I'm sure there are items, if we were to look through it, where there would be a lot of variation. And what I sometimes do is between two coders, I'll actually create a variable which is the discrepancy between two members, two coders' ratings, as Sylvia knows. All right. So that's just an explanation of the output. Now, I invited a couple of people into the group. One is Kia Edwards, who just completed a 2-year odyssey, if you will, of coding 127 psychotherapy sessions of adult patients on an inpatient borderline unit. I know it was boring to you, but and she led a coding team consisting of four people and is going to be defending her dissertation hopefully by the end of the summer. And I just invited her to just spend a little time talking about Q-sorting in general, because all of you are going to be embarking on this task, and I wanted her to kind of fire up the troops. So.
Wow. I don't really know how to fire you up, but I guess just talk about Q-sorting, what my experience is.
Your experience working in a team, the process over 2 years.
I would say,
was it fun? Was it not fun?
You know what? I thought it was a lot of fun, but then I had a lot of investment in it too, because it was for my dissertation. But I think that probably the best part of it for me was that I was looking, I was the transcripts were for patients that I'm particularly interested in working with. They were for borderline patients, so women who were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which I thought was really, really interesting. And when I first started working on it, I didn't really have a whole lot of clinical experience, so I thought that it was really neat to kind of read through these transcripts and actually see what it looks like to have a therapist and a patient who are working together for an extended period of time, and to actually see like the different, the subtle kind of nuances in like the therapeutic relationship. Like you see how something that the therapist says, how that impacts the patient, just in terms of, okay, well maybe the therapist said something that wasn't particularly empathic, and then you can kind of see the impact of that one particular statement on the whole session as a whole in terms of how the patient is reacting to the therapist, how the interaction between them changes. So I thought that that was really interesting, and it actually started me kind of thinking about my own work with my patients. Like I eventually started working on an inpatient unit with borderline patients at Creedmoor, and I would find myself in my sessions kind of thinking about, okay, if I say this, how is this likely to affect my patient, or kind of looking back on it later and really sort of analyzing how the process sort of unfolded. And so I think that's probably the most positive aspect of doing the coding, was that it really does give you a glimpse into what actual clinical work looks like. And I think that it also helped me, because I didn't really have that much experience as a clinician when I first started doing the coding. So I thought it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of debates, for to put it nicely, in our coding sessions. Giacomo and Sylvia would know when we
Giacomo was hospitalized once, but you know, but it's really not a big deal. His eye's a lot better now.
We had a couple fist fights on the freak out, but I mean it was really fun to kind of have everyone in a group and kind of have this spirited debate going back and forth when we didn't necessarily agree on how one person had coded it versus another person, how another person had coded it. So it was a great, great experience.
Also, I think it gives you an opportunity to look at how you view interactions between people in a different light.
Absolutely.
How someone might look at something and have a very different perspective from you on a particular interaction that you view or read about. In Kia's case, she was Q-sorting psychotherapy transcripts, verbal transcripts of psychotherapy sessions. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to be viewing, obviously, you know, video footage, which is a little different.
Right. I think that it was actually a negative in some ways that I only had the actual transcripts to look at, because you miss kind of how people are looking and their facial expressions and how their tone of their voice when they're saying certain things. And so some of that would kind of get lost in the coding process, because then it's subject to interpretation. Like I'm interpreting this as an empathic statement, and then maybe Sylvia is seeing it as the therapist is being a jerk. And so you kind of, I think it's definitely better that you guys get to have sort of the visuals and actually be able to hear what's going on.
So it could be also a vehicle for personal development as well. Now talk a little bit about your Q-sort recipe box. I mean, people want to know about that. So
I had a nice little box that I kept my cards in, because they were very important to me. I had to keep them nice and pristine and clean. So I carried them around in the box.
Kia actually brought these to a class once that I had her speak in, and everyone was very impressed by that. Actually, I think we got a few recruitments as a result of that. So anyway, any questions for Kia about her experience, or maybe you can just state what questions you're asking of the data.
So I'm looking at transference-focused psychotherapy with borderline patients, and all of the women who, I have five subjects, and they all were in treatment for, I think it was about 25 weeks, and it was 3 45-minute sessions each week. And I have symptom severity scales for each week that they were undergoing treatment on an inpatient unit. And so what I'm looking at is, well, I have two hypotheses. My first hypothesis is that the more that the therapist adhered to a psychodynamic model of treatment, since that's what transference-focused psychotherapy is, the more symptom reduction you would expect to see, so the better outcome you would expect to see with the ladies And also, my second hypothesis is when you see the presence of an interaction between the therapist and the patient, where the therapist makes a transference interpretation that fosters insight on the part of the patient. So the more that you see that interaction happening between the two of them, the more symptom reduction you would expect to see. So the better outcome you would expect to see over time. So we're really looking at the therapeutic process over time and change over time, and relating that to what's happening within the therapeutic dyad. That's
nice.
Sort of the crux of it.
Okay. Any questions about that?
I want to go into the dance. Yeah? Put it in the group.
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely put it in there. If any of you are interested in kind of seeing it or hearing about it, or if any of you are interested in kind of seeing my proposal, I can definitely, I don't mind shooting that off to any of you who are interested in kind of looking at it. So. Hmm? Oh no, I just mean my written
proposal. I got it. It's really good. It helped me to sort of write my paper for Jill's class, actually.
Swell.
Really slight you. It's not published, but I
you should give you half an A for that.
I understand the Q story. What kind of questions can be asked.
Yeah, and there's so many questions that can be asked using the Q story, which is what is really nice about it, which I'm sure you guys probably already know since you've started working on it.
Now, what Kia doesn't know is that I was also able to collect a prototype, a TFP, transference focused psychotherapy prototype.
Really?
We have that. So not only do we have a psychodynamic psychotherapy prototype, but we have a TFP prototype, which might actually be more enhance your prediction of your outcomes over and above what the psychodynamic prototype can do for you. So we have that at our disposal as well.
Oh, that's
great. So I just want to thank Kia for coming and giving us a little slice of life in a coding team.
Yes, coding has been my life for the last 2 years. It's going to be sad to let it go. So very sad. So if any of you guys have any questions or anything, please feel free to email me.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Kia.
No problem. See you guys later.
I think the video is definitely compared to like when I'm transcribing just the audio. I feel like seeing the video is definitely a big help. I mean, a lot of things just with seeing it.
Yeah, we talked about this actually in one of our last coding team meetings from the previous coding, that there are pluses and minuses. I think one of the pluses is that you get to see actually what's going on, and the nonverbals obviously is all there for you. The minus is that, and Giacomo and Sylvia can help me out here, that reviewing is more difficult. I mean, you can go back to page 2 and say, this person said this on page 2. It's a little harder to do that with video. Yeah, that might make it a little bit difficult in that regard. But I don't know, you two can say, just doing this one, easier, harder, the same?
I thought it was harder, but it was more interesting. It was like, it was visual, so I got to like, see what's going on. So I thought it was like, more interesting to see. But in terms of coding, I felt like less sure. I'm a little bit less sure of myself. I felt I like wrote tons of notes, just like,
I mean, I found it like easier in a way because it would stick with me more, like mm-hmm. it stuck with me more. Like when I watched the video and then I couldn't do it right away, like I did, like let's say 40 minutes later, I did the coding. And 40 minutes later, I still remembered everything because I had the visual. It was like watching a movie. So it's like mm-hmm. 40 minutes after the movie, you remember the movie. But while with the transcript, 40 minutes later, I would have had to go over it, like because I would forget the details. Mm-hmm. But then it's hard to quantify certain things. Mm-hmm. And for me, like another difference has to do with the population, the comparison, like the borderline women, they were like extreme, like certain things were like out there, like, you know, they would be, because of, you know, their diagnosis, like, but with your client, like he is is a child that doesn't have anything that extreme. So it was a lot more difficult for me to put like the things in the extreme part because nothing was that incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. So like that was, I had to push the items more than mm-hmm. I did before. Mm-hmm. But overall, like it was comparable, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess I should have said this or followed this when Theo is still here, but I just had the most trouble, I think, with deciding between the three, neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic file, between these three for some reason.
4, 5, and 6?
Yeah,
those are the most difficult piles, really, because the discriminations among the items is very subtle,
mm-hmm.
and actually those three piles are the least important piles. So it's the extreme piles that are really crucial to what makes a distribution unique. So whether an item is in pile 4 or pile 6 isn't going to make a whole lot of difference in the end. I mean, pay attention to it, just don't do it randomly, but what really matters is what's in the outer piles. That's what really drives the distribution's unique characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So statistically, 4, 5, and 6 don't really mean all that much. Now, of course, if you place an item in pile 5 and someone places it in pile 9, that's a major difference. So you do want to think about every item, but if you really think it's neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic, it's not going to matter a whole lot in the end whether it's in pile 4, 5, or 6. All right.
Ask a question.
Yeah.
Those people who have coded transcripts versus videos, I'm wondering if you felt more of an emotional reaction to one or the other. Like more of a response. I mean, you were saying, Sylvia, that it kind of stuck with you more. I wonder if there's like something more along the lines of countertransference in your viewing a video versus a transcript.
It might be. Like, it was also like the first time in my life that I saw a session with a child. So like it was like a big impact on me because I had no idea how a session with a child would go, like really in real life. And it was very nice to see. So that definitely. Mm-hmm. Emotionally though, as I said, like the borderline shocked me so many times with what was being said, like as far as like the content of the session. There's certain things like I haven't forgotten to this day, like, you know, certain topics. So like that is like, I mean, you know, that was stronger there, but like definitely the child thing was important for me because I'd never seen one before.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, some of the comments that we read
right.
are just so outrageous, and not always from the patient's perspective. I mean, some of the things the therapist said were pretty outrageous, am I right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they stick with you as well, but right. obviously countertransference played a big role.
Yeah.
But the population, I think, drives part of the attraction or pull. But I hear what you're saying. You want to know whether the media influences one's countertransference reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I hadn't thought of, actually.
I mean, I think if those were on video, the ones that we read, like, definitely we'd have a more of a, like, an emotional, like...
Even more of an emotional reaction than you did to the transcript?
I think so. And it would definitely stick with you more, I think, yeah. And, like, even, like, what I think he was saying, you can't... Like, when you couldn't tell if the comment was, like, empathic or, like, just a sarcasm on part of, like, the therapist because it was, like, part of, the, like, the type of therapy that they were doing, like, I think that itself is a good answer, you know what I mean, get a feel of, where the therapist is at also, I guess. It kind of helps the whole thing stick with you more. I don't know, I haven't seen enough of these videos yet to hear them.
Yeah, we've only done one, but... you know, while you're here, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you want to talk a little about your dissertation,
okay.
that would be fine.
So I'm about to propose, and my dissertation is basically about countertransference, that's why I asked the question, and process and outcome with a single child psychotherapy case that I conducted myself when I was in the clinic. And I have all the videotapes of all the sessions. And so in the treatment and in the supervision, I did the QSAR every week. And I also did a countertransference questionnaire every week after the session. And I collected outcome data from the child's guardian every 8 weeks or so. And so when I'm thinking, well, what I'm going to do is... get two coders, two independent coders who have been trained with the CPQ to then look at the videotapes and do the Q-sorts for all of them as well, and look at the discrepancies that exist between my Q-sorts and theirs. And the hypothesis is that the difference that lies between them is really about the countertransference that I experienced in the session with the child. And that there's like a muddling that can happen, or a, you know, like a change that can happen in your perception of what really goes on in a session with a patient when you're the one doing it and then you're the one coding it later, you know? So that's the main gist of it. And it's really kind of just all coming together now. I'm leaving things out, obviously. It was a very short version of it.
But wait, where are you now in the process? What do you have to do yet?
So now what I have to do is, I mean, I have all of my data. What I have to do is recruit two coders who will, for pay, code my 34 sessions that I have, and basically, you know, as soon as possible, get that data together so I can start to analyze it and look at it, and, you know, just compare their codings to mine and start to look at how the countertransference could be present in the difference between them. So I'm proposing next month, and then hopefully we're off and running from there.
So this group could potentially be a pool of coders,
yes,
if they had an interest in that.
Yes.
What are you paying, do you know?
I don't know yet.
I mean, if it's good enough, I might even be one of your coders.
I think you're already biased as a supervisor on the case.
You mean so I'm excluded?
I'm not sure yet, but I mean, I'm starting to think about it, and it's definitely, you know, I'll take suggestions if there's something you would do it for, but something you wouldn't do it for, because everybody's busy, and you know,
well, I can tell you what I'm paying them for this project. It's $25 per Q sort for the real sample, not for the practice. But but by the time they're done with the training, they will be online, ready, trained, ready to go.
Right. So.
What was that phrase? Ready to lead on day one, or what was it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it could be comparable potential.
Did you apply? I'm curious if the process, are you applying for a grant right now, or like?
I haven't yet. That's my intention. I mean, if I get one, great. If I don't, it's coming out of my pocket, but I'm willing to do that because I want to get my dissertation done. And
okay. So that's like a personal choice, but like everyone can apply for grants, but were you to not get one, then it's a choice to
You know, if I can get reimbursed for it at some later date, that's great. If I can get it ahead of time, that's great too. So we'll see what happens.
Well, let's see. You have 34?
34 sessions, yeah.
So that would be 68 sessions, right, times $25 would be what? $68 times 25.
$1,700.
Be like $1,700 bucks.
Yeah. So the grant could cover a significant portion of that, but
one would hope. Otherwise, you're out $1,700. So
it's a small price to pay after I've already paid how much money to go to the program.
How much is that? Like it's one day in the program?
Exactly.
Classes,
yeah,
like
you
write down the tuition.
It's like one credit.
So it's a mere pittance.
Yeah,
it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's perspective.
It's a dissertation as well.
I would pay $2,000 to have my dissertation just done.
Yeah.
There you go.
Actually, I probably paid more than that to just done. But,
you know,
for you,
do it
for you. Yeah, any taker,
right,
you
buy one online.
For me.
Yeah.
Looking for person.
Looking for coders. So I definitely it's doable, and it's something you're very jazzed about. You're really enthusiastic about it. And so that's an opportunity for people to get more coding experience,
it's
make some money.
It's definitely interesting case. It was
oh, absolutely.
Boring at all. So, you
is that
have,
the birthday cake girl?
That's the birthday cake girl. Have you heard about her yet?
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Folklore now.
Yes, she's a legend.
Oh.
She was 7.
Now she's a 12.
Oh. She's still in the clinic.
So one of us could potentially get her.
So
potentially.
So that person is out.
That person's excluded
yeah.
too, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you really want to do that, make sure you don't get this patient.
Yeah. And that can be arranged with the director.
Yeah. So what I've been thinking about, and I haven't mentioned this to you yet, is that I'm thinking of putting together an edited book of the dissertations that are going to come out of the QSORT methodology that we're doing. So I'll include Kia, Lene, possibly Laura, if you decide to do. So you'd all take a chapter in the book. Then we'd have contributors. I contribute a chapter. Celeste Schneider, Stuart Ablon, Bernie Gorman at Hofstra, who's actually going to be helping us with statistics. So each person gets a chapter, so you get a book chapter out of it too, if you decide to do a dissertation using the data that we're working on or some other data set that you're interested in. So if that appeals to you, this is also a good opportunity to further your career goals.
That's appealing.
I'm liking this.
Wait 10 years?
Oh no, it's not going to take. I mean, it's not going to take that long.
We'll see.
I mean, now the Kia's data that she coded, there's a lot of data associated with those 5 patients that she's not using. So anyone who has an interest in piggybacking off her dissertation and carving out your own dissertation from those other data that she's not using, that's possible. I was just speaking to Lene, there are possibilities in using her dissertation data for another dissertation. She's not doing anything with prototypes. We have CPQ prototypes that we could use for another dissertation related to her data. Of course, the data that you're going to be coding for this data set, the cornerstone data that Celeste has given to us, that's a dissertation waiting to happen that no one has claimed. So there are options for dissertations, and then automatically, if it's good enough, the dissertation will be included in this edited book that I'm conceptualizing right now. So
I also have attachment data on my patient, remember? Because I did the completion with her. So if someone wanted to, I never got it coded, but if someone wanted to get it coded and then look at process with that, variety of
the coding, actually, did you administer it once or twice?
Just once.
Yeah. Okay. The coding of a story completion task costs only like $70.
Yeah.
And we give it to either Carol George or Judith Solomon in California, and they would code it for like $70. Very minimal cost.
Yeah. Use it to transcribe the session.
Exactly. It's a little bit of a pain, but it's doable. For the attachment story completion task, you transcribe it in 2 columns. One is the column of gestures that go on between the administrator and the patient, and the other is the actual verbatim transcription, and they follow along in parallel. And I have with another project I had about 100 of these transcribed, so I can give you a copy of what a transcription looks like. But anyway, that's another option for dissertation.
And it was a really interesting story completion. If anyone's interested in attachment and process.
I'm about to do one with this client that we're watching the videos for. Yeah. In the next few weeks, so. Okay. We'll email you for tips on illustration.
It was wild. So, yeah.
I think I'd definitely be interested in doing some of them. I definitely need some practice and make sure I'm doing this the right way, because, you know, for this first one, I'm not sure. I didn't enter the data right, so I've got to just make sure that I'm doing this right and get some practice. And I'd definitely be interested in doing some.
Yeah, we'll keep working and practicing, and we'll see where people are. And as people's reliabilities keep inching up, mm-hmm. you know, if you get to a certain level,
that's what I mean. If my reliability yeah, is,
yeah, mm-hmm. then you automatically qualify for a project like that.
Yeah.
Because what Lynnae's going to need is, because she's going to need reliable coders.
Yeah.
And so right now, nobody in this room is reliable. Not even Giacomo and Sylvia, because this is a new, and even Laura and Lynnae have done this CPQ stuff for a while now, but can you look at a common session independently of another person and still see things the same way? That's a question that nobody can answer in this room right now. Hopefully through this training we'll get to that point where we start seeing the same things in the same way.
I was wondering what you were thinking in terms of having an odd number of people, like, I don't think it's going to, but like in terms of pairs and stuff.
Oh, not just odd people, but an odd number of people?
Both of them, yeah. You know, because then I was thinking, like, if we don't have, if everyone, like, qualifies, then something could probably be there.
Well, you know, I'm just assuming, you know, based on my 2 years of experience mm-hmm. working with Kia and that coding team, not everyone here is going to want to continue. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to make that assumption right now. Not everyone is going to take to this. Not everyone's going to really achieve reliability. There's a lot of factors involved. We had several people drop out in the process of coding those 127 sessions for various reasons. So this isn't for everybody. And so I'm not worried about the odd number so much, because just from my experience, not everyone's going to just grab the baton and run,
mm-hmm.
you know, for various reasons. So, let's see. So, shall we go to the videotape? Or should we talk about questions that people had? Leah, you in particular had some very interesting questions, as I recall. I don't remember off the top of my head, but...
I can't remember.
Yikes!
Well, there's two of them.
What's your question about?
One of them was...
I can actually open up your email message, probably.
You asked about, like, if the therapy session was related to the child's chief concern.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
said real concern. How would you know that if you don't know about the case? Because
oh,
I was CC'd on that email.
Yeah, that was
oh,
one
right.
of them.
Oh, yeah, that was a question I was
asking. Yeah, I was wondering.
Mm. Okay, well, how did I answer?
You said, well, you asked Celeste. You emailed Celeste.
Oh, that's
Celeste
right, that's right.
Back about that you really look at what are the primary issues within that session, and is the session...
Yeah, now, exactly, now the...
Sort of a non-answer.
Yeah.
Right.
Ouch.
No, well, I mean, it's like your opinion on point. Because
the session
felt so
plain, you know, it's like a
session.
Play, you know, it's not like... It's
yeah,
because
there was one, part of the video where he, like, maybe he was having some bathroom issues or something. I don't really know what happened, but
yeah.
But I didn't know if that was something that was typical of him or not, and if that was part of the reason why he was there or not. And not no, there. Then there was in the Q-sort, there was something about bodily functions
yeah.
and like a discussion of it, and I didn't really know if that was relevant at all, if it was just this freak thing that happened.
And that was really, like, having a video was definitely huge for that.
Just
that Florida, you could see, like, how he walked around and stuff.
Right. Right. Now, for a lot of reasons, I have to keep you blind to the diagnosis, to the specific concerns and issues of the patient. First of all, kind of like for confidentiality reasons, this is a patient who's still being seen in the clinic. But even more important, perhaps, because each session needs to be taken as its own kind of novel that you're reading, and you can't cross-reference it with other novels written by the same author, because we're going to be coding a series of sessions, and if we let other sessions influence how we see one particular session, all the sessions are going to be kind of the same, their QSOAR distributions are going to be kind of the same, and then we can't make comparisons across sessions. If every session is going to be basically the same, then we can't document subtle changes over time in the process of doing a psychotherapy with this patient. So we would imagine, right, that process in session two with a patient is going to be very different than process in session 32. But if we're thinking about coding session 32 the way we coded session 2, it's going to homogenize the data. And then that's going to obscure subtle differences between sessions. So I know this particular item is a little confusing if you're just taking one session in isolation, but I just got to ask you to do your best with it. I don't remember exactly how you phrased the question, but was that the answer I basically gave?
It's sort of just like what I got from them was like you kind of decide what you think that the issues are based on the tape and then answer that question accordingly.
Right.
I remember the other question I had was I thought that he seemed conflicted about some issues. Like it seemed like he was kind of extreme.
Mm-hmm.
On both ends, so I was like, would it be a neutral child?
Oh, right, that was your other question. Relevant. Right, mm-hmm. And my answer to that is, if you see two extreme behaviors related to an item in the same session, if you feel they kind of are in the same amounts or same quantities, they kind of cancel each other out, and so you'd have to put it in a middle pile. I mean, we encountered that issue with the PQS, the adult version of this.
Was that instrument. Independency?
Like,
try to
independent,
yeah. I felt the same way.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I coded that in that item. I think I did end up putting it in the middle because I was like, well.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
It's on the board.
All right, item 88, material of hour is meaningful and relevant to child's conflicts. However, I don't know anything about Laura's client and what he's in therapy for. Were we supposed to have received information about this? No.
I'm really good at keeping my mouth
closed. Huh?
Oh,
right.
You asked me earlier today. I really don't want to know what to say.
Data or they're coding data from the real sample, the cornerstone sample, they're not going to know anything, and they're not supposed to. They should be blind to both the patient characteristics, the therapist characteristics, and the hypotheses of the study, really, ideally. So if we're doing this the right way. So, is the material that the therapist is addressing in the session relevant to the child's conflicts as observed by the coder in that particular video, in that particular, you know, session? What does Celeste say? Okay, that's Lene's dissertation proposal. I can't find it, but okay, she said basically the same thing.
She said yeah, the same session.
All right. What other questions came up? You had a similar question, I think, right? Right, so if you see them in the same session, they cancel out and you put it in the middle pile.
No, like if you have 10 things, let's say, that you would put in a pile that's only allowed to have 5. So
oh, okay.
You decide which go
away. Right, well, part of this, you know that feeling, right?
Sit long and hard and debate with yourself in your head about where they should go and which one really has the most value, and try and come up with all these different examples of what, you know, from the video, and then just make a call, basically.
Yeah, part of the beauty of this instrument, as well as the frustrating part of this instrument, is the forced choice distribution. You get a perfectly normal distribution as a result, but what it means is the coder has to fit what he or she feels to be round pegs and square holes sometimes. You know, it's difficult to force five items in pile nine when you don't feel there are five items that really belong in pile nine, or vice versa, pile one. You have to force them. But just think, what I do is when I cue sort, I think in my mind, okay, I'm just really ordering these items from 1 to 100. And yeah, there might not be anything in the session that really stands out to me as being most characteristic, but there has to be a 100. There has to be some item that's more characteristic than any other. And whatever that item is, even if it's not a real standout item, if it's the most characteristic of the 100 items that I have in front of me used to code a particular session or characterize a particular session, that item goes in pile 9. So that's how I think of it. I don't know if that's helpful to people.
What about things that don't happen? Because like that, if something happens, so you can...
Right, that was your other question. Yeah. Which... We talked about, we spent a long time in our coding team talking about this, that if an item doesn't happen, it's just not part of the session. It goes in the middle pile, neutral pile. But if an item doesn't happen, but there's a demand placed on the therapist or on the patient for that item to happen, and it still doesn't happen, then it would go in an uncharacteristic pile like 1, 2, or 3. And what was the example I gave? I think I gave, was it sexual issues? Because that was an item that...
I'm thinking like giving advice. Like if okay. There's no advice giving, like going on by the therapist, you decide whether it's a neutral, uncharacteristic, what as to whether if the patient asks for advice. If the patient asks for advice and doesn't give advice, it would be uncharacteristic. If, you don't, if the patient doesn't ask for advice and no advice is given, it's neutral. You know what I mean? There's like an opportunity for it, but they don't...
They're not coerced or
yeah.
Seduced into giving advice. So I mean, that would be uncharacteristic.
I kind of think of it as like avoidance versus not happening at all. So like, you know, if something is like avoided or it looks like defensive, or like let's say so the card about represents his parents in play. So, you know, if he did represent his parents in play, that goes the top of the pile. If he didn't at all, that's probably towards the middle. And if I asked him about his parents and he said, I don't want to talk about them or something like that, then that would really go in the least characteristic pile. I mean, that
right.
would be like, I sort of think of it that way.
Does that help? So like resisting a particular item or avoiding it, however you want to look at that, being defensive, that would bump it down in one of the lower piles.
Is it a bad sign if there's, I noticed, I mean, my cards are all mixed up, and for some reason I noticed that I have like all the 30s together.
Hopefully that's a coincidence.
Yeah, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. Like sometimes I'll have like, oh, it's like, you know, then it's easy to enter it into the spreadsheet because they're on one line, but
Yeah, we talked about this the last time we met, that one of the tricks of doing this quickly is that you can, in each pile, if you put them in sequential order, it's easier to enter into the computer. Mm-hmm. I do that.
Yeah, that's what you did, and that's why you see that they're like all in a row.
Yeah, so I think it's just coincidence, hopefully. Any questions about items in particular? Any other items that stood out?
Looking for it, but I can't like remember what it was. So,
are there parts of the videotape that you'd like to review?
I
Oh, I remember, you raised another issue, Shoshana, I just remembered it. Some of you have a CBT background, and if you watch this video, it's going to shock the hell out of you, right? Because it does, right? It feels like nobody's really doing anything. What the hell are these supposed to be doing?
I probably am just not doing it. Probably the right.
So, you know, being exposed to this is going to be shocking to some people. And, you know, whether, regardless of what you call it, CBT, psychodynamic, it doesn't matter. What this therapy is psychodynamic. But regardless of what it is, just take it as it is. Whether it be what you consider to be a good example of psychotherapy, a bad example of psychotherapy, not psychotherapy at all. The items are anchored in behavioral descriptions. And that's the great thing about this instrument, that everything is there's some subjectivity in the writing of some of the items and conceptualization of some of the items. So there's some subjectivity, but by and large, it's behaviorally anchored, which allows us to forget about theory for a moment and just say, okay, what are these two people in this room together actually doing? Now, some of you might say nothing, which is fine, but then you represent the nothing in your item distributions. It's not a criticism of you at all. It's just, it is what it is. And you don't have a manual that you're following. You don't have a recipe book. You're not going with a cookbook to tell this patient to take 10 deep breaths or any of that stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But you're doing something that we call non-directive therapy. Right? It's non-directive. You're not directing him to do anything, to say anything, to feel anything. It just is what it is. And at times you're going to intervene and make interpretations, but they're going to be pretty few and far between because of what we know about this patient, which the rest of you don't know. So I happen to be supervising Laura in this case, so I know the case pretty well, and what Laura's doing is what she should be doing. So just take the session at face value as much as you can and code what you see and what you hear. That's all you got to do. Just code what you see and what you hear. I understand it's going to be shocking for those of you not familiar with a more non-directive kind of child psychotherapy process, but your job is just to see it, to hear it, and to code it. And so that's a concern, that it had been a concern. Does that make sense? Okay. Do you want me to review anything from the session? What I'd like to do is, and I took notes, I hope everyone's taking notes as they're watching the video to help them with the coding. Certainly I don't expect you just to watch the video and then code it cold. I took notes, and the notes should really reflect certain items that you're thinking of when you're watching the video. I mean, maybe Laura, you and Lene can talk a little bit about the process from going from the video to going to the cards. Not all at once.
Well, you want to, like, you know, my experience as a viewer has not been frequent. My experience as a participant
right,
more
right.
So,
right, because you would code right after
right.
the session.
Yeah. That's right. So you, actually, Laura's the one.
I'm the one who, because I'm a big procrastinator, so to code right after the session just seemed too exhausting to me, because after a session I just want to go to sleep. But what I would do is videotape it, and sometimes I'd watch it later in the week and then code it, and actually that helped me in supervision, because then I was like, you know, it was fresh in my mind. But and then lately I've had less time, so I don't do that anymore. But that's what I do. Like, I'll watch the video, I'll take notes during, and, like, as you get familiar with the cue sort, like, as you're watching it, items will pop up.
Yes.
Even when I'm in the session with him, I'll be like, oh, remember to put that card in file 9, you know, because I can't help it. Like, and it does, I think it helps me therapeutically, because I'm just, like, more attuned to process. I'm, like, noticing every little thing, and I'm sort of just, like, thinking about how I'm going to frame it in my process notes, and while still trying to be, you know, present. and really there. But yeah, I take some notes, and I just sort of, I try to do it as soon after watching as possible, and it's not always possible to do it right after, but soon.
Name that too.
I don't know any suggestions. I think everybody probably just watched the video and then coded it. It looks like everybody took notes, so.
I just wrote down, I thought it was helpful, I wrote down like a time, sometimes,
so that's important. Yeah, that would be important. I think it's an excellent point, Dustin, because when these meetings, what we're going to do is we're going to go over videotape, we're going to review it, and we're going to see whether you can support the ratings that you gave a particular item. Right.
I was actually looking through, and there are a couple that there are a lot of discrepancies about, and I was curious, like 62 and 17 is another one. So I don't know.
Well, we typically do a discrepancy analysis, so will you?
Well, the problem with that is that to calculate discrepancies between each coder and every other coder. It's
so
massive. Yeah, I think if we pair up, after we pair up, it's easier to do that. So right now we can just eyeball it like Lene did.
Yeah, I looked down to see like where the ones fell and where they, you know, and just looked across to see, because those are the most extreme ratings, so then how did everybody else fall on that person's ones, you know? And
okay, so 62, yeah, 62 is like crazy. So.
Yeah.
Well, somebody read item 62 for me.
Isn't everyone pretty close except for one?
Besides Sarah, I think everybody else is pretty close.
Everyone has six.
Sean has a six, really.
I'm seven, eight. Sarah. True.
Sean is worth something. 30.
Yeah. Six.
Oh,
four.
Sarah's looking at the wrong
one. Okay, so you're saying Sarah's the outlier.
Yeah. I guess I just get interested because there are, I mean, with each card, I guess this is always possible, but there are some that are more wishy-washy types of feeling cards anyway, but this is like, therapist points out a recurrent theme in the child's experience or conduct. So it either happened or it didn't, so the perception, like, uh-huh. It's interesting, the perception, yeah. Like, that's something that happened or it didn't, or it happened frequently or it didn't happen frequently enough, in your opinion. So, just curious about how people...
That might be a neutral versus uncharacteristic argument, though. I wonder if that's what happened.
Yeah.
My sense was that I didn't really, so it was sort of absent from the session, which is why I put it, I gave it like a 5 or a 6 or something like that.
And you were thinking it was absent, so it was
I think I put it at, I'm really surprised I put that as a 1. I don't know. I think it was because it was more jumpy to me from like topic to topic. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't see one thing that kept coming up. Like I didn't, it wasn't a therapy session that was about something. You know what I mean? It was kind of.
It was a therapy session about nothing. It's like a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, I remember the theme, like you were saying, is I remember right now you're making your own city and making all your decisions.
I wrote that.
That was my
idea.
Theme.
Play is mastery.
And that's like a theme, I think.
And then you said that you, like, helped come up to make the decision. I thought that had to do with like the therapist, the card that talks about the therapist, or the patient thinking that the therapist is guiding. And I forget exactly what it was, but I remember that card. Yeah.
I was thinking about two things. Like I put in an 8, and I think it's because one thing is when you said sometimes you have problems with the tubes putting them together, but not today, you didn't do it today. Mm-hmm. So I saw that as a reference. And then also when you said about the peeing, I don't remember exactly what you said, but something about him touching himself or like putting his hands in his pants. Something like that. So like those two things made me think that it was pretty characteristic.
But you can link something to a different session and that would count for this, or is it within
no.
session?
But she said it.
I did say it. No, you're right. I did link to a previous session, but...
Well, read the item again.
Therapist points out a recurrent theme in the child's experience or conduct.
Well, that doesn't say in the session, so you're right. It can be extra session, but you as the coder can't think about a theme. It has to be mentioned.
I would have to say something
yes.
like, you know, you spoke about that last week, too.
Yeah. You do this
exactly.
You have to
exactly.
take direction from...
my words.
So I have a feeling that what you sort of mentioned that is more another item that says, like, it's a session about only one thing or different things.
That is another item.
Like, that's like a different item, and I also agree that, like, yes, the session wasn't about one particular thing because it was pretty jumpy. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we have to stop, but this is what we did in the last 7 minutes or so is pretty much how coding teams go. The first 53 minutes of this meeting was not, but what I envision future coding team meetings to be like is what we just did in the last 7 minutes or so. Talking about the items, talking about the video, hopefully viewing video. We've got this great system here where I can show video right up on the wall here, and we can talk about it. And Dustin, your point is very good, that if you want to justify something, some item placement, jot down, if you can, the time. Oh, this happened at 21 minutes, 32 seconds. And then when we talk about it in the coding team meeting, I can fire that right up on the screen, and we can look at that sequence right away. Does that make sense? Any questions or concerns?
Do you have any extra copies in, like, the list of the cards that aren't cut up?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll get that for you. Now, Laura is going to get us our next session.
Yes, I already started the upload today, so it takes all of 48 hours, but wow. I'm kind of starting to think I'm going to put it on DVDs because it's telling me something about my bandwidth is at like 60% of the monthly usage or something, like because of the number of times it was downloaded, it adds those up.
Oh, really?
And so soon it's going to ask me to pay more, I think, and so really? I'm just going to shut
what
it down,
like,
and do DVDs.
Do they like rewritable DVDs that you just go over every week? You know, and we all have our own DVD.
Oh, if you all brought them in each week.
Each of us have like one DVD each.
I could copy them and like bring them in.
And then just, we have them. Like,
but I don't come back till Tuesday.
Yeah, how would you get them?
I could bring
out
them in on a Friday. I could bring them in tomorrow if you guys all brought
them. I mean, not this week we might not be able to do that, but
and
I'm saying necessarily.
Week. But I'm thinking like
you don't have to make new CDs every week. If everyone,
well, maybe
if
you
have
two CDs
one,
and then you cancel. You
two,
rotate
because,
the two.
Yeah, then okay. I would, then I could give you guys DVDs
for the next session.
Rather than have to drive it to school tomorrow.
Do they have those rewritable DVDs? Because I know they have
yeah,
CD.
Yeah, they have DVD RWs. They're more expensive, but if you want to give me funds, I can buy another.
Just call me Sugar Daddy.
No, just like, yeah.
DVDs. I think this is the way to do it. I think that's
yeah.
Right. I think that's a really good idea. Because then I can hand them out, and then you guys get the full week, because I'm a procrastinator. Like, if someone gives me a DVD, like, with 2 days in advance, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I need, like, some time to, like, sit with it.
Sure.
Procrastinate with it before I get to it, so.
Make yourself feel bad about why you're not doing it.
Yeah, pretty much. I've got to feel guilty.
Beat yourself
so
up.
So I need my
yeah.
full week of feeling guilty, so. Yeah, that would be good if I could give them to you right here and now instead of mailboxes, and then who knows when you guys get them, and you're not even here, so.
And we're not going class anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Why we coming now.
Okay, so this really is our just one time to trade off.
We're not coming to school at all.
Let's do it that way. This data transfer thing really is making me mad, so.
And we don't want to make Laura mad.
We'll talk about it. Oh, no, make me mad. I hold all of these sessions. I can hold them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
All right.
So this one, what are we getting?
So this one I'll transfer.
Yeah, we'll upload.
But I'll buy DVDs by next week.
Or download,
and
yeah.
Need a new one on DVD next week.
Well, I guess we could. We don't have to, like, if each of us buys two DVDs, it's a $3 thing. If you buy 55 million DVDs, it's a $50 thing.
Well, but what do you do with money?
I'll see you guys.
I'm a money tree.
I'm going to pay for my dissertation.
Yeah. Right. There's some money in the
Sugar
grant,
Daddy.
Whatever. I mean, it won't be more than like $50 or something.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense actually if one person buys it, and you can buy it and just give me the receipt and I'll reimburse you. So.
Okay, I'll do that. All right, well, the data is transferring as we speak, so, you know, I don't know, you'll get it in 2 weeks, who knows. But maybe in the next couple of days.
So go on the Microsoft website and download it in the computer.
Yeah, download it in this week. How did you watch it this week?
I use it as a computer.
Okay. Yeah, it should work on Windows Media Player or something called VLC. I also have my, on my computer. I don't know what it stands for, but it's another media player. I don't know.
It's a pirated software program.
Probably media. Whatever was free.
All right, thanks everybody. Oh, and these meetings are recorded, and I think I sent everybody the link for these sessions if you want to hear them again or you want to go over something. All right.
What do you need?
Also, Celeste has an interesting story. Celeste is going to be listening to these meetings as well, so.
So in 2 weeks, I will be gone. So from the 15th to 26th, I won't even have really access to a computer.
Where are you going? Bora Bora?
Yeah, pretty much. No, I'm going to Israel, but I'm leaving on next Sunday, so I could probably do it before then and send it to you, but I won't be at the meeting on Thursday.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
That's fine. And then...
You want a conference call in?
Internationally. But then for the next week, I'm not sure how that'll work because I won't have the DVD. Because if I'm not there...
Right. She's saying that bandwidth is not going to be... I'm not sure how she wants to do it, but the bandwidth will not be as taken up as much by only one person.
So maybe she might
want to do it just for you.
And then, that could work. Right, I think I'm getting
cool. Get out with her.
I will.
All right.
I will. Next week.
All right.
I sort of have the same thing. I think I'm missing either one or two starting at the last week of June.
Okay.
And then I think the first week in July.
All right.
But I will have access to a computer, so...
It's
fine. I think the only thing would just be a DVD problem, I guess.
Right. Yeah, maybe she could just upload it for you.
Yeah.
She's saving bandwidth by not doing it with everybody.
I don't know. It might be the same thing. I have to do the calculations. When I'm in the Caribbean, I don't think I have a computer at all. They're like, there's more. I have no idea how it's going to work. When I'm in Italy, I can definitely do anything as if I was here,
okay,
outside of the meeting.
Right. All right.
But my question was different. Anytime you have any time to meet, because I think you wanted to talk about my In a Million Years dissertation project.
Oh my gosh.
I know. But it's a summer that I had
to your paper?
No, also, but I just want to throw some things in, some thoughts have been going through my mind, and I know it's like the most open summer we'll ever have in life. So it's like, I kind of feel next summer I'm going to be under down here, 7 years out now, and I have the month of August off, technically, and July and August, this year.
Right.
So I'm not going to be doing anything aside of coding. So, you know what I mean? I have a lot of time in my hands that I can maybe put to use.
Right. Okay, what about, how's a half hour sound? Good.
Sure. I mean, I'm
all right, 3:15 on June 19th.
I'm in the Caribbean.
Exactly. Oh. Such a hard
time. Between 18th and 25th.
Okay, so what about July 3rd?
I'm in
the
Sorry. You picked the 2 days that I'm leaving.
All right.
And I'll be down in the home 3 weeks in July.
So when are you coming back?
July
23rd. So how about the 24th at 3:45?
I know it's like in a million years in advance, but I also know that when I have time, I don't want to,
Sure.
Be going to the park and doing anything, and then next year I'm going to be like, I was in the park all the time.
All right, so July 24th.
July 24th.
At 3:45.
July 24th. Yeah. 3:45.
Okay.
Keep talking about it. 3:45.